This is Radio Boston. I'm Tiziana Deering. There is a new Massachusetts U.S. attorney in town. Rachel Rollins, the first Black woman to serve as district attorney in Suffolk County, became the first Black woman in the U.S. attorney's post, too. She was sworn in earlier this month. Now, no stranger to controversy as a reformer, Rollins' swearing in came only after a bruising confirmation in the U.S. Senate. She was so controversial that the Senate took its first roll call vote on a U.S. attorney nominee since the 1970s. Rollins also faced threats against her life, so many that local faith leaders called on the Justice Department to give her a full-time security detail. The U.S. Marshal's Office declined to comment to WBUR about the status of that request. Rollins dialed into Studio 4 earlier today to reflect on her first days on the job, and I started by asking her, given the tremendous headwinds she's faced, is she having any fun?
I actually am. It is such a privilege to come back to an office that I learned from. I had worked as an assistant United States attorney for almost 5 years when I was a younger lawyer. So to be able to come back to the place that I believe taught me about lawyering is really just very humbling and an honor. And we are having fun. I mean, we deal with incredibly serious cases, but we have a really great group of individuals, some of whom I've worked with for many, many years and knew when I was here, others of whom that are new. But yes, we try to make sure that we are kind to each other and enjoying our company because the work we do is really hard and important.
So you do call the shots now. I wonder if there was a moment when you were in the office before as a more junior person where you thought, boy, one day if I'm ever in that seat, this is what I'm going to do. And now you have a chance to do it. Was there ever a moment like that that you can remember?
Oh, for sure. I mean, there is certainly autonomy as U.S. attorney, and we will use it, I will, as my predecessors have. But I believe there were some cases when I was a younger AUSA where I thought, wow, what is the policy behind this? I'm not going to tell you what those exactly were at the time, but I will tell you it's really interesting now sitting in this seat to see all the thought that goes into the policy decisions we make that impact people all across the country.
That makes me think about a couple of cases that you've been handed. Two in particular, one that recently you and the federal government dismissed, and that was MIT professor Gong Chen. Your predecessor, Andrew Lelling, filed charges against him. It was part of a larger effort to go after theft, intellectual theft from China. The accusations against him were that he failed to reveal information about contacts or connections with China that later it sounds like we discovered he wasn't actually required to reveal in some federal applications. There's that one, and then there's an immigration case that involves a judge from Newton who didn't like an ICE agent standing outside her courtroom door waiting for somebody who was inside and chose to help that defendant out the back door. When you're handed cases like, and that one's still being prosecuted, when you're handed cases like that, how do you think about whether they match the values you want to bring to the office? You know, I got to assume there's a bit of a knot, like a moral knot for you in things like that.
Sometimes there is, but I want to be clear. There's nothing different sitting in this seat as there was when I was the DA of Suffolk County. I am always going to encourage whatever prosecutors I have the privilege of working with to do a rigorous review at every point of whether or not we can prove our case. And we should never require somebody, and I'm not implying that we were going to do this in these two cases, but the government should never require somebody to have to go to trial and get a not guilty if we know we couldn't prove the case in the first place. So with respect to the Chen case, which I can speak about because it's a matter that is no longer pending, there was a determination that there were issues with respect to materiality. And I am always going to encourage my prosecutors to come to us when we believe the landscape has changed, that we can't prove our fundamental elements. This is an opportunity for us to explain to prosecutors how powerful we are. The decisions we make impact people's lives. And so when things are ever shifting and changing, we have to be nimble enough to immediately acknowledge if there is new evidence or new facts, and I'm talking generally now, or different shifting theories. We should always be open to those things, because as the government, we have so much power to deeply impact people's lives.
We're talking with U.S. Attorney Rachel Rollins in the early days of her tenure. You've said that two of the areas that you really want to pursue as U.S. attorney have to do with drugs and with sex trafficking. I want to talk about both of them. I was struck by your push to address sex trafficking in the Commonwealth, and you've said you believe it's happening significantly here. And I was thinking about this in preparing for our conversation last night, and I was thinking, there's somebody's story. There's somebody's story you learned or they told you that must have pushed you, drew you in this direction. Is there a story out there that really compelled you?
There are so many stories that have compelled me. I think amazing organizations like My Life, My Choice has done such an important job of educating us about how predatory certain individuals can be, how they look at vulnerable populations of young women often, but there are young men and men that are trafficked as well. So there are so many stories to tell. And, you know, I've always said it's the survivor's story to tell, not mine, but I have been most moved by that work when I was district attorney. And it is my sincere hope and intent as U.S. attorney that we are going to be far more active in the sex trafficking realm, as well as the drug trafficking and gun trafficking worlds, where there oftentimes is overlap.
So I want to stay with that for a minute. You are talking about drug trafficking. I know that the crisis at the intersection of Melnia Cass Boulevard and Massachusetts Avenue has loomed large for you. You've talked to WBUR from the streets there. And again, as you talked about wanting to take on drug trafficking, which has been a big area of complaint for people experiencing that neighborhood, I wonder, is there a person who's sort of sitting on your shoulder, somebody that you met at Mass and Cass, somebody whose experience you learned, that stays with you, that is sitting on your shoulder as you think about how you want to prosecute these changes and make change there?
Sitting on my shoulder, I have people coursing through my veins. I'm the guardian of two of my nieces because of the opioid crisis. So I have siblings that are struggling with this right now. I've been to more graduations from programs than I could imagine as a sibling, not as a district attorney, not as a U.S. attorney. I look at the people, the humans on Mass Ave and Melnia Cass as potential family members of mine, because I've walked on those streets looking for people that I love to make sure they're alive or to see if they're doing well. So I take this very, very personally, and was proud to sit at the table with Governor Baker and Attorney General Healey and different secretaries at the state level with respect to housing and mental health and public health. So we have the right people sitting at the table making these decisions now. It can't simply be a carceral response. You bet there needs to be a carceral response with respect to those traffickers that are going down there and taking advantage of people who are trying desperately to seek help for a disease, a health condition that they have. But I don't believe that we should be targeting individuals that suffer from a substance use disorder. I think we should be getting them treatment and help overwhelmingly, and then focusing the carceral response at the DA level, at the Attorney General level, or at the U.S. Attorney level to bring the full weight of the criminal legal system down upon people trafficking in harm. And we need to be very clear, sex trafficking is happening down there quite a bit as well. So those are the things that I think about, in particular now with January being Human Trafficking Prevention Month. We are talking with all of our local, state, and federal partners about these important issues.
You have custody of your two nieces. They're fairly young. You just talked about them as being a source of motivation for you. How do you talk to them about the job you're doing now? How do you explain it to them? And what do you tell them you're trying to do in the world?
Well, the first thing I tell them is that I'm really proud to be only the second, I use the word girl because they're girls, even though I'm a woman, to have this job. And that I tell them every day that little girls and young women and women can do anything they put their mind to if they work really hard and if they are decent and fair and kind people. So we talk about that all the time. It was a little different, I think, with the district attorney job. They would see me on TV, for example, at a crime scene, and they understood, you know, if Commissioner Gross or Commissioner Long called that somebody was probably hurt. You know, I don't know whether they understand, you know, their 8 and 12, the China initiative or like national security issues. But I try to explain that this is a job where we really try to keep now the entire state healthy and safe. I also try to talk to them about like fun things like Cocomelon and going to, you know, ice skating and stuff. But they do definitely recognize the importance of the work that I'm trying to do here.
So can I get my policy geek on with you for just a minute?
For sure.
We have this situation in Massachusetts where there's some things around drug policy that either cities and towns want to do or that the state has done, which are different than what federal law is. The obvious one is that recreational marijuana use is legal in the Commonwealth of Massachusetts. It's illegal federally. But we've also got some cities and towns like Somerville that want to implement sites that allow one to safely inject illegal drugs under supervision to ensure health and safety, despite the fact that those drugs are illegal. We have talked about Mass and Cass. We have talked about the homelessness and addiction crisis there. There is research to suggest that something like a supervised consumption site can improve health outcomes. It's illegal. How do you think about the tension between those two things, and what do you want to signal in the Commonwealth?
It's a fascinating point, and I've thought about this quite a bit. You know, the intersectionality of state and federal worlds, right? In my previous role as DA, I, along with DA Ryan, you know, I would say famously, filed an injunction against ICE to stop entering state courthouses when we were trying to prosecute cases to detain people, and we were successful. Now, in the role that I sit in as the U.S. attorney, I would have been, you know, defending ICE's behavior or sitting in a courtroom watching my AUSA and somebody from Maine Justice arguing that what ICE was doing was lawful. It's really interesting, you know, with the ICE matter, with respect to marijuana, which of course our state has made it very clear that not only with recreational but medicinal, that the voters have spoken and said that they do not believe that these should be criminalized in up to certain amounts. And then certainly with respect to supervised consumption sites or harm reduction facilities, that would be in violation of the Controlled Substance Act on the federal side. So what we are doing, honestly, is we are looking to the Department of Justice for guidance. Places like Philadelphia have filed injunctions. We know that there are other places in the country that are moving forward, but with the, you know, wisdom of Attorney General Garland and Deputy Attorney General Lisa Monaco, we are going to see what the policy is going to be of the United States. And then we'll make sure that in those handful of states, for example, with respect to marijuana that have legalized it, we're going to have discussions about, well, how do we reconcile sort of the voice of the voters or the residents of our Commonwealth with what our policies are? And then ultimately, you know, I took this job. We're going to do what it is the Department of Justice says that we're going to do. We're going to follow what the policy is of the Department of Justice. But most importantly, we're going to explain it to people. And whether they are happy or not is up to them. But what we aren't going to do is have the answer just constantly be, we have no comment. We aren't going to speak on that. We're going to explain to them why, if there are things that they have questions about or want to know a little bit more about, if we are permitted to speak about them, we're going to explain them in a way that people can understand.
Last question for you. What can't we see in the public that you, as a first in this U.S. Attorney's office, are doing and you want us to know?
That we are trying desperately, my first assistant and I, to make this office, not only the 300 to 350 or so people who work here, feel comfortable, right? Because change is really hard. And there was a long road for me getting here. So we want them to know that we value them. We are going to learn as much as we can about the office as quickly as we can, but also that there are going to be ways that this office, I think, is a little more accessible to the Commonwealth. And I guess just how much work goes into collaboration building, not just with your staff and coworkers, but all of our external partners. We just put a lot of work into trying to hear as many opinions prior to making any changes so we can try to get it right.
All right. That is Massachusetts U.S. Attorney Rachel Rollins. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you.